various kinds were placed on Soviet weapons, and the permission to unlock them came only from the top. According to Bruce Blair, a leading command and control expert, Soviet safeguards against unauthorized use were more stringent than those of any other nuclear power, including the United States. The rigidly centralized command structure, however, made the Soviet Union quite vulnerable to a decapitation attack. Despite all the underground bunkers and secret railways built in and around Moscow, Soviet leaders constantly worried about their ability to retaliate after an American first strike. Instead of loosening their control of nuclear weapons and shifting authority further down the chain of command, they automated the decision to use nuclear weapons. In 1974, little more than a decade after the release of Dr. Strangelove, the Soviet Union began work on the Perimeter system, a network of sensors and computers that could launch intercontinental ballistic missiles without any human oversight. Completed in 1985, it was known as the Dead Hand. The Soviet General Staff planned to activate Perimeter if an American attack seemed imminent. The system would retaliate automatically, firing long-range missiles if it detected nuclear explosions on Russian soil. Perimeter greatly reduced the pressure to launch on warning at the first sign of an American attack. It gave Soviet leaders more time to investigate the possibility of a false alarm, confident that a real attack would trigger a computer-controlled, devastating response. But it rendered American plans for limited war meaningless. The Soviet computers weren't programmed to allow pauses for negotiation, and the deterrent value of Perimeter was wasted. Like the doomsday machine in Dr. Strangelove, the system was kept secret from the United States. In March 1991, 3 months after the Drell panel submitted its report to Congress, Bob Purifoy retired from Sandia. He had no more tolerance for the bureaucratic warfare and petty slights, the disrespect from Sandia's upper management. More important, his goals had been achieved. Congress, the weapons laboratories, the Pentagon, and the Department of Energy all agreed that the safety of America's nuclear weapons had to be improved. Weak link, strong link devices were put into every nuclear weapon, and other safety technologies, insensitive high explosives, nuclear cores encased in a fire-resistant shell, were to be included in every new design. The changes in the stockpile that Purifoy had sought for decades, once dismissed as costly and unnecessary, were now considered essential. Building a nuclear weapon without these safety features had become inconceivable. Sidney Drell regards Bob Purifoy as one of the leading, though largely unacknowledged, figures in the history of nuclear technology. He thinks that Purifoy's achievements rank alongside those of Admiral Hyman G. Rickover, who pioneered the safe use of nuclear propulsion for the U.S. Navy. And yet Purifoy told me on many occasions that he regrets not having been braver, especially about the safety problems with the Mark 28 bomb. He'd chosen to work within the system, despite his strong opposition to many of its practices. Although he was critical of the way in which official secrecy has been used to cover up mistakes, he'd honorably obeyed its code. As we sat in the sunroom of Purifoy's modest home, with a lovely view of the Texas Hill Country, talking for hours about his work to improve nuclear weapon safety, his wife Barbara listened attentively. Despite a close, loving marriage that had lasted for 60 years, he'd kept these details to himself, never sharing the weight of that dark knowledge with Barbara or their children. Within a year of Purifoy's retirement, the nuclear weapon community that had long ignored, dismissed, and opposed him became outspoken in defense of his cause. The Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty was being discussed at the United Nations. The treaty prohibited the sort of underground nuclear detonations that the United States and other countries needed to develop new weapons. A ban on these tests was, in many respects, a ban on new weapons, since no military would place its faith in a warhead or bomb that had never been proven to work. During a Senate debate on the treaty in August 1992, the opponents of a test ban came up with a novel rationale for continuing to detonate nuclear weapons. "Why is testing of nuclear weapons so important?" asked one senator, a close ally of the Pentagon and the weapons laboratories. "It is so important because nuclear weapons, even today's nuclear weapons, represent a great danger to the American public and the world because of the lack of safety of their devices." He then put a list of broken arrows into the congressional record. Another senator opposing the treaty claimed that we already know that science and technology cries out for safety modifications. A third attacked the Department of Energy for its negligence on safety issues over the years, warning, "A vote to halt nuclear testing today is a vote to condemn the American people to live with unsafe nuclear weapons in their midst for years and years. Indeed, until nuclear weapons are eliminated." In 1996, the United States became the first country to sign the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. And since then, more than 180 other nations have signed it too. But the U.S. Senate voted against ratifying the treaty in 1999. Once again, the treaty's opponents argued that nuclear tests might be necessary to ensure that the American stockpile remains safe and reliable. During the administration of President George W. Bush, the Pentagon and the weapons laboratories supported the development of a new nuclear weapon, the Reliable Replacement Warhead, RRW. It would be safer, more secure, and more reliable than current weapons, the administration promised. The RRW would also be the first green nuclear weapon, designed to avoid the use of beryllium, a toxic environmental contaminant. Bob Purifoy has been bemused by the newfound passion for nuclear weapons safety and security among his former critics. He sees no need for more weapon tests, supports the test ban treaty, and thinks it would be highly irresponsible to add a new weapon like the RRW to the stockpile without having detonated it first. "The plans to develop new warheads and bombs," Purifoy says, "are just a money grab by the Pentagon and the weapons laboratories. The yield-to-weight ratio of America's nuclear weapons became asymptotic, approached their mathematical upper limit around 1963. New designs won't make detonations any more efficient, and a study by Jason scientists concluded that the cores of existing weapons